argument is Francisco versus Principi, Mr. Andre.
May it please the court, Mr. Hale. In 1995, in September, my client filed a sexual harassment charge against her supervisor for exposing himself to her and others. That matter was settled on the basis of an agreement that contained three stipulations. First, that the plaintiff would be permanently reassigned away from her offending supervisor. The second, that she would be assigned to a position outside of acquisition and material management service. And third, she would be reassigned to the same pay grade of GS-9. The government breached all three of those stipulations. Despite the agreement, plaintiff was in fact placed in a lower grade position. She remained on the payroll of acquisition and material management service. She was detailed, or effectively detailed, to a position in recreational therapy. However, she still remained a contract specialist under acquisition and material management. She was eventually even ordered that she was to return to the supervision of the offending supervisor and to acquisition and material management, otherwise she wouldn't have a job at all.
Wasn't that pulled back, though, when they realized the settlement agreement was in effect?
No, that was pulled back, but it was pulled back because my client refused to go back. And not because they realized their own mistake. My client had to involve herself in the process, go to her union reps. My client, in the meantime, was getting psychological treatment as a result of this because of her having to deal with the fact that she's going back to this man who's exposing himself to her. So even if they later on corrected it on the basis of my client's actions, she still suffered in that interim period psychological distress and other problems as a result of their failure to do what was appropriate in the first place.
And I recognize that's one of your arguments, but she never actually worked under that supervisor.
No, and she never would have. She would have simply, even though she had had her job with the government since 1970, she never would have worked under that man under any set of circumstances, no matter what her bosses would have told her. So that wasn't going to happen under any set of circumstances, not because the government was so benevolent to look out for their own agreement, but because my client simply insisted that just wasn't going to happen. So for the government to now say, well, she didn't suffer anything, if she had not protested, if she had not demanded that she not go back to this position, the undisputed facts point out that she was being ordered back to that position. Otherwise, she wouldn't have a job at all. There's no dispute on that. Nobody's brought any affidavit saying, no, we never said that to her. We never told her that. There's no dispute as to those issues. So even if the argument is made that there wasn't a, quote, long-term effect in the sense that she actually was sent back to her supervisor, the short-term impact of this situation is really undisputed. The fact that they admitted that mistake doesn't remedy the problems my client went through. She had to take medication. She had to see doctors. Again, these facts are undisputed. And the contract is very simple. One of the most important provisions of the contract, which was, by the way, drafted by the government, and under normal contract principles, that would mean it's interpreted against the drafter. The government's contract, or a settlement agreement, specifically said that the terms of the contract are what is set out in this contract, that there are no additional terms. Now, the government wants to say, well, you know, she was subject to a RIF, and as a result of that RIF, she had pulled out of her position. But the government admits that the position she was originally assigned to, a GS-9 recreational therapist contract specialist position, was never eliminated. So her position was not RIFed. The argument is that somebody else's position was RIFed, and because their position was RIFed, they get the chance to bump her out. Well, that's fine.
That's how RIFs work. Well, is it your view that there's no set of circumstances under which they could demote her?
Sure. If her position that she was transferred to was eliminated, it's eliminated. If her position...
What's the difference between that and the effect of RIFs and bumping people down?
Because they never indicated in the settlement agreement at all what RIF procedures of someone else would apply to my client.
Well, they didn't indicate any of the circumstances under which she might be demoted, did they? And yet you acknowledge that some of them are perfectly legitimate.
Well, the ones that would be legitimate would be the ones that affect her position.
Why is that more legitimate than than a RIF that causes her to be demoted? I don't know what...
The difference is that the RIF that you're talking about took place in material and acquisition.
Yeah, so what? I mean, so what?
She was transferred according to the agreement.
Why does that make a difference? It's just another circumstance which can cause a person to be demoted. Now, if they singled her out, of course, you know, that's something different. But if this is just an automatic consequence of the way the company is structured, why would it make a difference?
Because it isn't an automatic consequence. They were doing RIFs in acquisition and material management. That was the area that she was supposed to be permanently transferred away from. Yet the RIFs in acquisition and material management still affected her. A common reading of the agreement would have allowed her to interpret that she's insulated from what takes place in acquisition and material management, because she's supposed to be permanently transferred from that unit.
Now the person who took her position under the RIF, did they have they had more seniority than she did? Did they have a higher retention standing? I think that's
the terminology that they used. That's correct. Now, but the argument was, see, the agreement says that she's transferred out of acquisition and material management. It says these are all of the terms of the agreement. The government who drafted this agreement, if they wanted to tell her, look, if we do a RIF in acquisition and material management, and somebody has higher seniority than you, you can still be bumped even though you're not in acquisition and material management anymore, then fine. She could have read that and determined, well, do I want to go with that or do I not want to go with that? But that was never in there. In fact, the provisions of the contract, the settlement agreement, specifically said, this is it. This is all that the agreement is.
No, but you've acknowledged that there are all sorts of circumstances which could cause her to lose her job or be demoted, even though they're not written into the agreement.
My acknowledgement is that if the contract is carried out completely, she's transferred out of acquisition material management completely, she's given a new position, same grade, and she doesn't have to work for a supervisor anymore, the consequences of what happens later outside of material and acquisition and material management, outside of that supervisor, certainly affect her just like they would affect anyone else.
Where is that in the agreement?
It's not that it's in the agreement. The agreement would have been fulfilled.
So the agreement is incomplete.
Well, the agreement is complete. But what happened was the government failed to put in the agreement provisions that they subsequently wanted to interpret as being in there. They wanted to interpret that a RIF in material acquisition and material management affected her, even though she was supposed to be permanently transferred away. And that's our argument. I'd like to save the balance of my time for rebuttal.
Thank you, Mr. Andrew. Mr. Hale?
May it please the court, Mr. Andrew. Ms. Francisco, I was an employee at the VA who had a sexual harassment complaint against her supervisor. And rather than resolve the merits of that complaint, the VA agreed to permanently transfer outside of the section where the supervisor that she had accused of sexual harassment worked, and to permanently give her another job, same grade and pay. There was nothing, it wasn't a golden parachute agreement. There was nothing in the agreement which promised her lifetime job security regardless of her job performance or the changing economic conditions that the VA might be faced with. And the VA complied with that agreement, and Ms. Francisco was never sent back to work back for the same supervisor again. She makes a lot out of comments which she attributes to someone telling her that she was going to have to go back into that section at some point during the RIF process, but it's completely undisputed that the written offer that was extended to her corrected any erroneous information that was given to her, and she never was sent back to work for that supervisor again.
And the person that discussed the possibility of her going back to that supervisor was a supervisor at the VA? Who was that person?
Your Honor, the VA disputed that any such communications were made. I don't recall at this time the person to whom she attributed those comments. She wasn't definite about the exact time frame that it happened, but the time frame between the time, according to the record, when the VA first was aware that she had this, that this other position was open, and it was a higher graded position, so it was really something that would have been better for her, except for the fact that it was back with the supervisor that she had the problem with. And the time period between when they were first notified of that and the time when they issued her the written offer, which was which included the option of getting the job if she wanted and got, was just 45 days. So sometime
45 days from the time she alleges she had the conversation with somebody at the VA to the written offer.
Right. Well, that's the maximum that it could have been.
Okay.
She didn't actually pinpoint a date on it, so it could have been, actually, it could have maybe been only a few days. It could have been a shorter time. It was sometime less than 45.
But that period where she's claiming there was emotional distress because she was overwrought because she might have to come back and work for this guy.
Right. And so the worst, you know, putting the worst face on it, somebody told her they were going to do something that would breach the agreement, but she acknowledges it didn't happen. And really, that's... Oh, I would comment on that. The other two arguments which were raised in the brief weren't discussed by Mr. Andry, and you know, I won't comment on those unless the court has any questions.
Thank you. Mr. Andry, how much time do you have? 2 minutes?
Just briefly in response to Mr. Hale's statement, if in fact no one did what counsel said they did, there would be no need to correct what took place. Obviously, someone told her that she had to go to this position, therefore she went to a union rep, and therefore some action took place that was subsequently corrected. And even counsel admits there was a correction because there was absolutely no justification for doing that. And so in that sense, at least for that period of time, she was under, rightfully under, a lot of distress.
Thank you. Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Anderson. Thank you to both counsel. Next case for our